When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
The following program is presented for entertainment purposes. WCHQ does not necessarily endorse the ideas presented.
Fearscape is a program that explores the legends and lore around many creepy and scary things. Information is researched and presented in an entertainment fashion. It is presented based off of what we found. Legends have a way of changing over time, so...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Fearscape here on 100.9 FM WCHQ, as well as the Destination Nation Network. We are your home for all things spooky and paranormal and weird and creepy, just like my co-host, Josh Rutledge. How's it going, Josh?
Hey, everybody. You're doing great.
That's right. I'm Stefan Gearhart, your other host, and we are joined today by a really cool guest that we've asked to come on the show and gladly said yes. We have author Kevin Gibson, author of the book Secret Louisville, as well as The Liberation of Crystal Hill, also a writer for Leo Weekly, and actually used to be a host here at WCHQ as
well. That's right.
You guys might know him. But yeah, we've got him coming on. We're going to be getting spooky with Kev Dog over here. That's right. I just made up your new nickname. So we're going to be getting spooky with him. But as usual, before we get into that, Josh, how are you?
Doing well.
Are you?
I'm doing quite well, actually. I'm a little tired. I've been not sleeping well since I accidentally lit myself on fire a couple nights ago.
that was some fun stuff for our friend list to make fun of you.
Right.
So it made really, really cool. But let's get into some spooky news so we can get this show on the road. So for spooky news this week, this one comes from Coast to Coast AM, is where I pulled this one. There's actually been a lot of news coming from Coast to Coast lately. A lot of times they'll even go a few weeks. It'll just be kind of the thing they cover on the show. The last couple weeks, I mean, I've been pulling stories left and right. But the one that stood out to me is one article that reads, "Eerie Beam of Light Appears in Canada." And what this says is that residents of the Canadian city of Edmonton were bewildered on Tuesday evening when an eerie beam of light appeared in the sky and sparked some truly fantastic theories for what had created it. The wondrous sight was reportedly first spotted at around 7 p.m. that night and remained visible for hours. As is often the case with such events, numerous puzzled observers posted photos of the odd illumination on social media and speculated about what it might have been. It would seem that the two most popular possibilities offered by amused witnesses were that the beam, of course, was an indication that aliens had arrived, or, failing that, that the illumination was demonic in nature.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. More serious-minded individuals raised concern that the strange light was coming from a disaster of some kind and proceeded to flood the phone lines of the fire department, who eventually took to Twitter to offer an explanation for what people were seeing in the sky. Fortunately, it turned out that the beam of light was neither alien nor demonic and had much of a less sinister origin. According to the Edmonton Fire Rescue Services Department, the beam of light was coming from a nearby refinery which was burning excess and unusable gases in a process known as flaring. They went on to thank residents for reporting the strange event and assured them that this is not a fire event. And for those in Edmonton who may have missed all the commotion, the department said that the flaring will continue for the next 2 days so that they may get a chance to catch a glimpse of the alien beam tonight. And I'm going to show you two of the pictures here.
Okay, I can see why they would be...
Yeah, I can see that.
It doesn't look like flaring. Okay, no. I lived near an oil place in Toledo, Shell Oil. No, that never happened. We always have the most amazing excuses from the government. You sure that wasn't swamp gas, boys?
You sure that wasn't a weather balloon?
Yeah, that big stream of light looks like it's blowing up the White House. That's Independence Day,
what's
my friends.
What's the movie Tremors?
Yeah.
When the car gets buried, you know, and its headlights are pointing up and someone's driving by and they see the headlights pointing up. Maybe that's what it was.
Well, you know, and if that was the case, Superman should have just spun the world back around and then pulled that car right back out of there. It would have been fine. But yeah, that's what we got. That's our Canadian news, I guess. So I would have loved to have seen that. I mean, they already see the Northern Lights. I wonder if even, you know, I mean, it sounds like they were a little messed up about it, but I feel like they're like, oh, it's yellow, so it's not.
Right.
It's not the norm.
I mean, when I hear beam of light, I think of like white light shining.
Yeah.
But that was...
Well, it's like in Toledo one time, every so often we can see the Northern Lights up there where my family's from. And one night we come out and there's just this red light. I mean, it was the most eerie thing that I've ever seen and it surrounded us. It was just like this... It wasn't like the city lights hitting the clouds because it was a starry night. It was just this red... ominous light that was everywhere all around us, and come to find out it was a real rare form of Northern Lights that's red and sits like that. But I had no idea. I mean, for like an hour we're just like, what is this? I thought we were dead, man. Like, I didn't
Mars
know.
Attacks.
Yeah, I didn't know what was happening, man. So, but yeah, anyways, that's spooky news. That's what we got this week. So let's go ahead and move straight into Creepy Catch Up.
Creepy Catch Up. Creepy Catch up. Creepy catch up. Creepy catch up. Y'all, it's creepy.
All right, Josh, I have nothing. I have nothing this week. It was no pun intended, but it was a dead week.
Yeah, so I've got something small.
We knew that. So.
Yeah. I had a dog that passed earlier this year. And we were like, it was my dog for 13 years. Loved him to death. So when he died, there's a local company here in Louisville that we actually found online, oddly enough, not looking for it in Louisville, but it's called Cuddle Clone. And
I've seen those.
And with like pictures of your animal and descriptions of your animal, they will make you basically a stuffed animal type version of your animal. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it looks just like my dog Eli. I mean, the
sidebar. How much was that?
Expensive.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
I'm gonna stick with the stock. Don't the socks.
Don't make purchases when grieving is the moral of the story. So we bought the Cuddle Clone. It took like 8 weeks. They made it and they shipped it to us. So anyways, we just moved, finally were able to get the Cuddle Clone out and set it up in the living room. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been seeing animal type. Disturbances around the house.
Really?
So like my story from last week, I said I thought I saw my cat come into the room, but my cat was laying on the couch next to me. So that was, you know, it was very small, like a dog or a cat type movement out of this corner of my eye. The other day, I was just standing in the living room, and my cat's sitting next to me looking out the window, and I hear the sound of my dog flop down on the floor. So I don't know. You know, I've heard of a lot of different ghost encounters. I've never heard of a ghost animal encounter.
Oh yeah. When I lived on Sixth and Park, we had what we thought were always ghost cats. I mean, we would sit there, and I would sit on the bed, and I would feel the cat come up and sit next to me. And go to pet the cat, there's nothing there, there's an impression in the bed. Or you could feel, you'd be standing, you'd feel it rub against your leg. Cats are sitting in the living room.
Yeah.
We used to talk all the time that we had a house full of rescued dead ghost cats. Like,
well, interestingly, right around the corner here, Hilltop Tavern, the owner once told me that two different employees late in the night, they would be standing there talking to somebody, and they would reach down, and like, because they saw a cat there. And one of them even said, why is there a cat in here? And the owner said, there's no cat in here. What are you talking about? He said, I just You just walked past me. Hmm. So, I don't know.
I believe it. Hillscats. I love Hilltop maybe Tavern, thing. Man.
Oh, me too.
Good food.
Love
good
the
place.
Tacos, yeah.
Yes. But yeah, now I'm going to have to go in for the Ghost Cats. But yeah, so I absolutely believe that. Yeah. I mean, especially if we believe how loyal dogs are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it could have attached itself to that, what was it called?
Cuddle clone.
Cuddle clone.
And I've also got his collar and tags on the cuddle clone.
On the cuddle clone. Yeah. There you go.
Well, so. And one thing, when I've had two different dogs die over the last 15, 20 years, and, you know, you get so used to certain sounds that there were times that I would hear the jingle of their collar.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like, wait, that can't be.
Right.
But it's so, like, real.
Yeah, we still...
That you think it's, you know, that it really happens.
My wife and I, we lost a pet 2 years ago that was her emotional support for 10 years. I mean, I only knew him for a year, but, like, I'm telling you, there are times we hear his collar, and none of the... All the animals have bandanas, not collars, so there is no jingle. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'll hear it sometimes, hear him come down the stairs, like, hear that jingle, but mm-hmm. she hears it quite frequently.
So all your animals have bandanas?
Yeah.
Like the cast of Oklahoma?
Yes. It's cute! And the jingling gets annoying, so...
How do you know they're coming, though?
Well, Kenobi, we have hardwood floors, so he's like, tick, 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 tick. The cats, no. Hey, cat! Even with jingling, they're slick. There's no getting away from that. But yeah, so that's our creepy catch-up, I reckon.
Yep.
But yeah, so let's get into our topic here, which is getting spooky with Mr. Kevin Gibson. Josh, I'm going to hand over the reins over to you
now.
Yeah,
sure. So Kevin, I first found you. We did Great Day Live back around the Halloween time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was online looking, or, you know, on their website looking at our recording, and I'm like, hey, what's this Secret Louisville book? And I saw your name, and I was like, oh, wow, you're local. It'd be great to have you on the show. And so I reached out to you, and you know, weeks later, here we are. So I guess let's just start with, you know, how did you get into to writing? And more importantly, you know, where did the Secret Louisville book come from?
Well, the book actually is basically a format sort of book. The publisher, Reedy Press, is based out of St. Louis. And they come up with book concepts, and then they find writers around the country in major metropolitan areas to write a local version.
Hmm.
And so they basically said, here's the concept, here's the basic format, run with it. So I don't really have to make it like any of the other books if I don't want to. I just kind of find my own way and create a book for them that I think will be interesting to the people here. Because obviously I know the market. I've been writing in this market for 25 years.
Okay.
So... I just went out and started talking to people and doing some reading, and it just put together, you know, like 90 different stories, little different snippets of things that, and it's not all spooky stuff. It's, you know, a lot of it's just
weird.
here's a weird spot you didn't know about. Here's a weird piece of history you didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them were haunting related or spooky things. And one of my favorite stories that I do a lot of speaking engagements, talk to groups and you know, banquets and lunch clubs and things like that. One of my favorites is the Witch's Tree, which is a lot of people around here have heard of that. A lot
that's
of them
where
have
I lived, Sixth and Park.
Oh, right Sixth and Park, yeah,
right
okay.
Outside my apartment.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so the tree, the story is, goes back to the late 1800s, and there was a coven of witches that would meet at this tree, and the city kind of didn't like it. The neighbors didn't care for it. You know, it was kind of a well-to-do neighborhood. They didn't want the witches hanging around there. So they decided, as part of a May 5th or some sort of May event, kicking off spring or whatever,
Beltane,
we're gonna cut the tree down, and, you know, in memoriam. I don't know why people cut trees down back in those days, but they did. And so the witches got mad and said, we're gonna put a curse on the city. And 11 months later to the day, this giant electrical storm hit Louisville and did all kinds of damage. And the legend is, and you can believe it or not, the legend is that a bolt of lightning struck the stump of the old tree.
Wow.
And a new tree grew, and the tree that's there now is gnarled and creepy and gross looking. Yeah. And you can just drive up to it and find it. But people still leave, you know, little trinkets mm-hmm. and stuff to kind of appease the witches so that they don't.
Well, it was fun for us because I am Wiccan, and so were my two roommates as well. So we're always like, this is so cool. We live where the witch's tree is. But, I mean, I would be mad. I mean, if it happened May 5th, that's right around Beltane, which is a pagan holiday. So, yeah, that's, they would be super mad.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, like, I mean, it's a great story. And people love to hear that story because most of them have never seen the tree. They don't know about the tree. So I can only hope that people, after they read the book, they go down there and check it out. Because I took my girlfriend down there, and I'm like, I'm just going to show you an interesting thing that I'm not going to tell you what it's about until we get there. And she was just like, oh, my God, this is so cool. This is so great. But it really is something to see. It's worth going down there.
So 6th and
Sixth and Park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We could always tell when somebody had done a news story on it or whatever, because all of a sudden for the next week, a bunch of people be coming and taking pictures and stuff.
Yeah.
And we had done, because I do improv comedy as well, my old improv troupe, we had created the most inaccurate ghost tour in Kentucky, Anna. And essentially, we would get suggestions, and we would improvise a ghost tour around Central Park and things, and we would just make up things. Like, it was the best. We had so much fun, and we had already said that it was this haunted tree before we knew about the whole witch tree legend and stuff like that. So when we found out, we were like, "Oh my gosh!"
It's a really cool tree. Regardless of why it exists the way it exists, regardless. Mm-hmm. It's really cool looking.
Yeah,
so 6th and Park, is that Old Louisville?
Yeah, right at Central Park.
Okay.
Right on the corner.
Yep.
Cool. So the...
Now, I got a question. Okay. It's like, because, you know, you said you had like 90 stories or whatever. Now, did you get somewhere you were like, well, this isn't going to work? That's the ones I'm always... Because I'm always curious about how many you actually interviewed
talked about. There's one. Like, there's not far from here, there's a house with an Olympic-sized swimming pool in the basement. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where I know where it is, but, like, I didn't want to publish this book with the address, you know, because of invasion of privacy. And I got to the point where I'm like, I literally pulled up in front of the house and was going to walk up there and knock on the door. And I thought, nope, I'm just going to let this one go because then I'm invading their privacy by even asking. So, but yeah, it's just not far from here. But the, you know, whoever was there was like an Olympic swimmer, and they built the house with this pool in the basement.
Wow.
Yes, I know. What is it? Walnut Street Baptist Church. They have like a bowling alley, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think I remember because I went to middle school at No Middle, which is just down the street next to like Manual High School and U of L and all that kind of stuff. And we took a we used to take field trips to Walnut Street Baptist Church to go bowling.
To go bowling.
Bowling for Jesus.
Bowling, exactly, man. Bad jokes. I got 100 of them.
So the, I was going to say something a while ago about your, you know, the tree. Those gnarled looking trees are always really interesting to me. And it seems like there's always a lot around cemeteries. And I always wondered if it's something to do with, like, the energy of the dead or whatever that causes a tree to kind of grow gnarled like that.
Or the chemicals from the embalming.
Could be that too. Yeah.
Or the evil spirits.
Or that demonic position.
Yeah, that's a light, okay? That's that whole little area, the apartments that I lived in, it's like a horseshoe. And so that tree is just the first part. Like, we used to call them Dr. Seuss trees, the ones that are sitting inside the horseshoe, because the flowers would grow along the branches. And it was crazy. It wasn't
So they wouldn't grow at like the tips of the branches that would grow.
No, they would grow on the main branch, like a sleeve. It was always the weirdest thing, and we would call it. My ex called it the Dr. Seuss trees because they're, you know, all those flowers, and they're just looks like a sweater.
My wife actually lived down around that area. She lived on St. James Court, and I want to say either in or close to the Pink Palace.
Nice. Pink Palace is up for sale right now.
Is it?
Yep. Up for sale.
There you go, Stephanie.
It's super haunted.
Yeah, it's on the list, so I'll have to get to that one day.
Yeah, we one day, man, I saw a guy. We were walking by in St. James Court, walking by the Conrad Caldwell Mansion, and we saw a guy look kind of like Teddy Roosevelt smoking a big fat cigar and had a pool stick in his hand, and we're like, whoa, that's crazy, you know? And then the next day we're talking to the guy had come out. He was putting a sign up, and we were like, "Oh man, did you guys have a party last night?" You know, blah blah. You know, we saw this guy, and they were like, "He was like, no, we had no party." But you know that they say that you could see the guy. One of, and I forget which one it was, and he always played pool, and he was always smoking cigars. And of course, I had to look up David Domine's book, and there's a story in there about it. We were just blown away because we saw this guy. In a, like a tux, just smoking a cigar with a pool stick in his hand.
So that is crazy that you would see that. I mean, and that's, I've never seen a ghost. I've seen signs of a ghost or stuff that a ghost has done, but it's like a bucket list item.
I've been kind of lucky. The times that I've seen things, I was not alone. And so, like, there's definitely been times, and those are the ones I question. But when, like, me and someone else both saw the same thing,
that's when you know you're not crazy.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
What's it, what do you say, the pudding?
Yeah, it's pudding, because the proof is in the pudding. Yeah. So it's a pudding moment. Pudding. Okay. Instead of pudding.
So when you're going around, getting back to your book real quick. So you're going around and talking to people. I mean, how did you get started just... talk to one person, leads to another person, and so on and so forth.
Well, I knew one thing that I always do with a book, and I'm getting ready to do this for my next book, is I just put a call on social media for anything that I may not know about. And the premise is, if you give me an idea that I didn't already have and it gets into the book, then your name gets in the book. The acknowledgments.
Nice.
So I got a lot of good ideas from that. A lot of it's just stuff that, because I tend to gravitate toward weird stuff and, you know, weird history and things like that. And so I just made a list and thought, okay, well, what else can I find that I don't know about? And so that's kind of the process, is that then you pick the best ones, then you pick the ones that you go and you aren't sure if it's going to be a good story, and then it turns out it is. And so you kind of elevate it and one of the things that I had sort of heard about but didn't really know was confirmed was a place called the Sauerkraut Cave in Tom Sawyer Park. Well, it probably did in its day. But it's in Tom Sawyer Park, and you can access it. It's got no trespassing signs around it now, I think probably because of my book. But, but there was an insane asylum on the hill there. And the cave was underneath it. The same column was torn down back in the 80s. But the cave is still there. And so the legend is that they would ferment sauerkraut in the cave to feed to the residents of the insane asylum, people who had been locked away and were receiving quote-unquote care. You can look up old news stories, and there was a lot of controversy of abuse and kind of bad goings-on there. And so... So the rumor always was that the cave was haunted, and part of the reason was that there were allegations that I think were never proven, that sometimes the residents of the asylum, and I can't remember the name of the asylum right now, not Arkham, but would you know, have children once in a while. And of course, they didn't want that. And so they would take the women down into the cave to give birth, and then they would... kill the infant and then and dispose of it deep into the cave. And so, of course, the whole thing is, okay, well, it's haunted and it's cursed. Right. And it's, and so I went down there to take pictures by myself. My girlfriend was with me, but her son was with us, and he was feeling ill, and we were walking all over the park trying to find it, and he finally said, "I've got to sit down." And so I said, "Okay, I'll go find it, and then I'll come back for you guys," which I wish I hadn't done now. But I walked, you have to walk down, you walk down this kind of this gravel road, and then you walk through the woods down a path, and then there's the cave. And it's got graffiti. People, teenagers go down there to get high and stuff. People
it's
know
a cave.
Where it is. Right. So, but I went in, I started taking pictures, and I walked inside the cave, and I took about two steps inside the cave, and I felt like I heard something splash or drop in the darkness, and I felt like suddenly I was being watched. And I was just like, yeah, I think I'm going to step back out now. And I stepped back out and took a couple of pictures. And then I was just like, I really feel like uncomfortable right now. Yeah. And I didn't understand why. And so I turned around and I hightailed it out back up that path. And I looked back like three different times because I felt like something was
following
me.
You.
And that may have just been my paranoia at being down there by myself. But it was really a strange experience. And I went and told my girlfriend, I went and found her. I said, I just had the weirdest feeling down there. And I told her, I described it, and she said, I want to go down there. I said, you're going down there without me if you go down there. So she never has gone back. But I went back with a news crew from Wave, and we went in there, and then did a story about it. And then, like, the next time I was down there, there was a no trespassing sign up by the path. So
yeah, so I did a quick search. It looks like it was called a number of different things, but originally it was called the Lakeland Asylum for the Insane, or Central Kentucky Lunatic Asylum, and then or Central Kentucky Asylum. But the main one was Lakeland Asylum.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well,
very interesting. Yeah, it said it had room for 3,500 people, but was at 4,500 people. It was like in its heyday.
You can check in anytime you like, but you can never leave.
Amen.
So the
love to check that.
Interesting there is that sauerkraut has just a very pungent smell when it's being fermented.
Yep.
And so,
or even when it's finished fermenting.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. I hate sauerkraut, and I'm German.
It's like how do you know if sauerkraut's going bad? Does it start to smell good?
Yeah. Because
well, so my it
just smells like cabbage.
So, yeah.
So a couple off top. So my wife loves sauerkraut. I do not love it at all. My grandmother though makes sweetkraut. Which is
coleslaw. It's called coleslaw.
Well, no, actually, it looks like sauerkraut, but it's sweet to the taste.
Hmm.
Interesting.
But what I was going to say is, because of that pungent smell from sauerkraut, it could easily hide other smells that may be.
Oh
in the
yeah,
cave.
Like yeah,
decomposing.
For sure.
You know,
flesh.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, just this article alone. I mean, this was your standard place that had electric shock therapy, lobotomies, ill treatment, all sorts of stuff.
And not a place you wanted to hang out for long. Yeah.
So yeah.
So you know, we know we got a lot of that stuff from your book, but you know, we also want to get to know you. And so, first of all, your experience with the paranormal, besides this book, did you have your own experiences, or what kind of led you to come into the paranormal yourself?
It's, my personal experience is limited, although I do have a very good story to tell you here in a minute. But I've just always been interested in it. I don't even know whether or not I believe in ghosts. It's one of those things I'm just interested.
Most
you know,
of
just,
us live there, I think.
Right. It's just kind of like, it's just an interesting, you know, I have a friend who says, you know, what if what we're seeing are future time travelers coming back?
We've talked about
to,
that
you
as
know,
well, yeah.
To visit us.
Or
and
multiple
we,
dimensions.
Right. And so it could be any, or it could just be energy that hung around. I've heard that theory many times, which seems logical to me. But we've all have our Waverly stories.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
And I went there for a pre-dawn tour with a group of people. And it was one of those things, we were just walking around. They were showing us the sights, and the sun was just starting to come up, so it was still fairly dark in there. And we went around into one of the hallways, and the tour guide said, stop. He said, okay. He said, look down as far as you can see on that far wall. He said, you can see shadow people if you really concentrate. And I looked, and I stopped, and I was like, I don't see anything. And then finally, I realized that it looked like the wall was moving. And I'm like, that can't be. But then I realized, it's like, you know, if you were to sit on the ground in a very crowded street and people were walking past and you would just see limbs, it sort of looked like that, except it was shadows, just blackness. And so, and it was very far away, and I'm like, you know, it could just be a trick, you know. But he said, okay, he said, let's proceed quietly. And then we got a few more steps down and it went away.
That's what gets me. You know, those guys, those tour guides, like, they have to be amazing for them to be able to notice things so quickly now, because it's happened so much in a place such haunted as Waverly is. Like, for them to just be like, there's a creeper. Yeah. See him climbing the ceiling. Like, well, they're so quick on it now.
And it's also that they're not desensitized to it.
Right.
Right. So they have seen it so much.
And they're not afraid of it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So my friend had his experience at Waverly. I think I know what hallway you're talking about there, and that's where he had his experience that we did the listener story on the air a few weeks ago. But I've been to Waverly twice, once as the haunted house, And then secondly, just on it like a tour with like 25 or 30 people.
That's what this was.
And, you know, they stop at all the, you know, the room where the nurse hung herself and all that kind of stuff.
The death chute and all
You know, I mean,
room 502.
But, you know, and I've always heard things, but I've never seen anything. It really is like a bucket list item.
It's kind of interesting because, my bucket list is simply Waverly. I still have never been. Like, when I was a kid, I used to try to sneak up there, but I got caught every single time. But no, I haven't been yet. And but anyways, like, now I forgot what I was going to say because you got me thinking.
Bucket list.
Yeah, I want to go
to
Waverly.
Your bucket list is Waverly.
Yep. Okay. Oh, well, the one thing that I love about hosting the show out of Louisville is the amount of people, when they find out that we have a paranormal show, almost everybody does. They have a Waverly story. Yeah. And I love it because, like, my hometown Toledo, there's, like, I can't think of the haunted place in Toledo, right? Yeah. Though, I mean, if I asked around, I'm sure. And then I'd go, oh, okay. But everybody here's got a story about Waverly. Right. You know, especially people, like, I'm mad at my wife. No offense, Sarah. I just found out that her mom used to be a candy striper there. And I'm like, wow. Babe. We did 4 episodes on this thing. Why didn't you tell me? I would have interviewed your mom.
Right.
Well, time for another episode.
Yeah. Exactly, man.
Well, it's like, you know, in Louisville, there's two things that everybody asks you is what high school did you go to? and what's your Waverly story?
What's your Waverly story? Exactly. And yeah, and other sports related.
Yeah. UK or U of L.
Yeah. When I first moved down here, that's what I got. And I had no idea either. I'm from Ohio, so it was Ohio State and Michigan. And I just said, Ohio State? And they were like, wrong answer!
To the merits.
And so with your book, and it doesn't even have to be the paranormal stuff, but like, what was the thing that blew your mind the most in Secret Louisville? Like the thing that you had no idea about, and you were like, whoa! You know?
There were... probably settlements that were here that I never knew about until, you know, I started really looking into that. You know, I always knew about Shippingport Island, but I didn't realize it was once like its own little city.
Yeah.
You know, and it was up until the early 50s, there were people living on Shippingport Island before, you know, the government took it over. And then another one is the Point. You know, you've seen High Gold Facade there on River Road at Frankfurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I never, it was just some old house, you know, and I remember they moved it at one point and I never thought much about it. Well, then I started looking into it and that there was a, you know, where the botanical gardens is going in and all that, you know, where along Beargrass Creek, you know, but back then Beargrass Creek ran along the Ohio River to Second Street. And so there was a settlement there called the Point and it was wealthy people, many of them who lived in New Orleans and came here for the summers because it was more, you know, less hot. And they had all these big houses and it was one of the prominent neighborhoods of Louisville in, you know, the early days of, you know, up until about 1850, 1860. And you know, so it's, and it's the only thing left of it now is the High Gold Facade because the 37 flood wiped it out.
Yeah.
And then there's one building, you know, where the condos are there on River Road, that big complex that's been there for maybe 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
There is like a little, like a brick building behind there, and it's got fencing around it. And that is that is the last full standing building from the Point. And it was just someone's house. But, you know, I've seen that building a million times on the High Gold Facade a million times, and I had no idea that there was, you know, that prominent kind of area there.
Did you happen to cover, did you know about the Meriwether House and Harrod's Creek?
No.
So I, because I live in Goshen, and so on my way in downtown to work every day, I drive River Road. That's like my route. So there's a house in Harrod's Creek there called the Meriwether House, and it looks like an old steamboat type style house. And so I pulled in there one day, and it's got one of those historic Kentucky signs out front. And so I read about it a little bit, and then I got online and researched it. And it turns out that that is the oldest house in Kentucky to be originally owned by African Americans. And so that whole area of Harrod's Creek was originally an African American settlement. And so the Meriwethers had that house built, and then they were the first owners of it. So So it was just a really interesting fun fact.
I love that kind of history, especially local. I love the.
Well, I've been learning a lot about Portland. I work over in Portland, and so my the guy that owns our business, he's born and raised there, so he's always given us like Portland history lessons. Yeah. We're a couple spots down from the museum and stuff. Well, he was talking to me about how I need to go check out Portland Wharf Park, and it's where Portland used to be, like the main where all the to-dos were back when we had all the shipping coming down before the dam. And like you can go in there and you can still see like essentially the roads, like they're the trees are separated. So it's all just walking paths now because it's been overgrown and covered over and stuff, and all the houses of course have been removed and business is gone, and like, and it was essentially It hung on as long as it could. I mean, that shipping port island, all of those, and the Great Flood got rid of a lot of like things. And I spent a lot of time shipping port. That's some of the bluest water the Ohio I've ever seen is down on the other side where you can walk down. It's mind blowing. But yeah, the crazy the Portland Wharf Park though, it's like God, you can just sit and imagine what it was like. And they've got little areas to say, here's where the cotton store was, here's where this was, and you're just blown away. Nothing's there now. Yeah. Like it's just a park.
I mean, just walking down Main Street towards the Louisville Science Center, looking at all those old facades and everything.
The iron, facades, which is I think we have the largest collection of iron facades in America.
We do. Yeah. We absolutely do.
So
it's pretty crazy.
But so I want to jump real quick, switch gears. So you also wrote a fiction book.
Yes.
It's called The
Liberation of Crystal Hill.
Yep. And was that so? I always have to ask, is it fiction based on any fact, or is it just pure, you had a dream and you wrote it down?
I wrote a short story, and this was, I was still in college, this was back in the 90s, and it won best short story in the state of Indiana among the, you know, the Indiana Collegiate Press Association.
Cool.
And so it was, you know, it was one of the things people said, that's a great story, that's great, you know. And so it was a first-person narrative story from the point of view of, like, a 12-year-old boy. And it was basically him questioning why, you know, why death happens the way it does, why death seems to be so random when everyone says that God has a plan.
Right.
And so I decided to write a book around that character. And so what I did was, I researched and found different kind of random, bizarre deaths and weave them into the story so that this character goes on this journey where he's changed by experiencing this. And, you know, he's growing up in this Protestant conservative town and family, and he's been being told all these things, and he's learning on his own that it's not what it seems. And so the ghost story is that the original mayor of the founder of the town, Mayor Jesse Crystal, and of course Crystal Hill is named after him, was this straight-laced, do-gooding, everyone worshipped him, thought he was amazing. And this kid does research and finds that this guy had some serious issues and didn't always live up to what he had. And so the kid ends up being haunted by this ghost, or so he thinks. And then so the whole thing kind of culminates in a sort of a big reckoning.
Oh.
And so the liberation is basically the townspeople are finally set free of these misconceptions they've had of the town. And
that never happens.
So, yeah. So,
what's it, the time period it's set?
It's sort of ambiguous. I mean,
okay.
It's a little town in Indiana that's fictional. I've sort of set it up above Floyd's Knobs, but it's, you know, I would probably guess it in the 70s or something, 80s maybe. Yeah. Okay. So.
So that's really cool. I mean, I've always been just intrigued by people who can just, invent stories. I mean, it's just. I think I consider myself a pretty good storyteller.
Yeah.
For other people's stories, but I've never really been good at just coming up on my own story.
You should take my improv class at Improv 502. In fact,
maybe Michael Scott will be there.
Exactly. In a week and a half, we're actually doing narrative improv about telling stories and stuff. But yeah, it's interesting to spin a yarn, so to speak.
Yeah. I used to write a lot of horror fiction. And I kind of got away from it just because I couldn't make any headway.
Yeah, it's definitely a saturated market.
It certainly is.
But yeah. I love it, though. Yeah. I mean, I'm the reason it's saturated. I read so much. And I get mad because I always tell people, I'm like, you guys know there's more than Stephen King, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I love Stephen King. Love, love, love Stephen King. But I'm all, like, I was at...
But if your name is not Stephen King, you're not making any money.
Yeah. That's, well, unless you're his son, Joe Hill. Now you're making money. But I was at Half Price Books the other day, and I go to the horror section. It was literally all Stephen King books, and there was like a smidge of like some other things.
Yeah, I like horror anthologies.
Yeah,
because then you get so many different voices and so many different ideas and stories. Those are my favorite things to read when I'm looking for fiction.
Yeah,
because have you guys ever read Harlan Ellison? Mm-mm. Sort of a sci-fi. He did a lot of sort of dystopian fiction. He has got a book that has been out of print for a long time, I think, called Deathbird Stories, and that was one of my favorite books of all time. Just because of just the stories were fantastic. His writing voice really influenced me as a writer. Mm-hmm. You might be able to find one on, you know, eBay or something. But I've still got my copy and I'm holding tight to it. Nobody gets to borrow it, so don't ask. But
I that's my thing. As I've gotten older, I love finding books from the 70s and back that haven't gotten re-released and things like that. Half Price Books is really good about that. And I meant to say I was at Book and Music Exchange, not Half Price Books. Half Price Books has a good horror section. But they also have those old paperbacks, like of horror and sci-fi. And I collect a lot of old sci-fi from the 50s and 60s and 70s and stuff like that. And it's just, it's incredible to read those old voices, you know, and to hear that. And it's a shame that so many of them have lost because they just became these, you know, pocketbook, you know, whatever, trash, you know, they read on the beach, you know, like all those romance novels, same thing.
Yep. Unfortunately, my ADD kicks in and I'm not very good at reading books, but I do love a lot of audio books. And so unfortunately, if it's not available as an audio book, I'm probably not going to hear it.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of, nonprofits and stuff that are now finding old books and they're making audiobooks out of them. I'll give you a link to one of the websites that I can't think of it offhand, but you can also volunteer and do the audio for these books. You know, it's not high tech. It's not like there's music playing and echoes like some of them
different
are
voices.
Right. You know, it's just people, but they are. They're reading these old books that have been out of print that no one's really reading anymore. So that there are audio versions of them. So a lot of them are public domain books, things that have hit the public domain. So they're always adding new ones every year. And it's really cool. That's actually cool. Recorded a couple. And it's really cool because I love like H.P. Lovecraft and stuff like that. And so love it.
That's pretty cool. So you just finished up a recent book. I can't remember what you told me it was.
The one that just came out was the Unique Eats and Eateries.
In Louisville?
Yep.
Okay.
It's about local restaurants that, I mean, their backstories and, you know.
Okay.
You're kind of a jack of all trades, man.
I have a lot of interests. I've written sports, I've written arts criticism, I've written news features, I mean, you name it, I've done it all.
I get that, too. As an artist, I write, I sing, I do theater, I do improv, I do all these different things. My dad's like, just pick one.
Yeah. I write music as well. I write songs.
There you go,
rock songs. But.
And so there you go. And then I've got two different podcasts on two different subjects. And so, it's all right. But I want to get back to real quick besides Waverly, did you ever have any other experiences ever happen to you? You said there were two or three.
My family is sort of rich with it. My late grandmother, would tell us a story when we were kids that was famous, and she would tell us, and she grew up in Greensburg, Kentucky, and they were extremely poor.
My best friend's from Greensburg.
Really?
Mm-hmm. She
Get
was
out.
Born That's... and raised. She's 10 years older than me, so she's there right now, actually, because her dad still lives there.
My grandmother grew up there in the 20s, you know, the Depression and stuff, and they lived literally in a cabin. You know, they lived in a cabin, and so she woke up one morning. She was in bed with her mom. Her dad was already out, I guess, in the fields working. And she said that this woman with a blue dress and black hair was walking around their bedroom. And she was just watching it. And she was like 7 or 8 years old. But she remembered this so vividly and would tell the same story every time. And she said that the woman was like she was She says it was like she was in a kitchen fixing, you know, fixing meals or doing something, but there was nothing there but her. Mm-hmm. And she was being attentive to certain things. And she said at some point her mom was like sleeping with her, kind of her hand over her head on the pillow. And this woman walked over and reached over her mom. And of course she was like watching this from and the woman touched her mom's arm and her mom's arm moved. She moved her arm, you know, like if someone touches you when you're asleep.
Right. Recoil.
Right. And so she watched that happen. And then when her mom started to wake up from it, the image of the woman just sank down into the floor and disappeared.
Wow.
And she told us this story over and over and over. There was one time that I was there, and I was about 12 or 13. My mom was there. And in this kitchen, we were at this kitchen table. And so I was on one side, and there was the, you know, old rotary phone hanging on the wall with the long cord, because my grandma liked to walk around and do dishes. And my mom was across from me, and my grandma was next to me. And she was telling the story. We were talking about the supernatural and do you believe in it and blah, blah, blah. And my mom, all of a sudden, her eyes got real big. And she said, "What did you do?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Look." And so I turned around and the phone cord was going back and forth. Back and forth. And she said, "Did you hit that?" I said, "No, I was sitting right here." But like, yeah, and I saw it too. I was like, so we all were like, "What the F is getting up?" Because we were the only three people there. And that thing was like swinging like somebody was had grabbed it and swung
it. Back.
Big burst of energy, man.
So, yeah. So it was, you know, like, Mamaw, I don't want to hear that story anymore. But around that time in my life, though, I've got a personal experience that no one ever really believed until I got older. And same thing. You tell the same story over and over, and it begins to be believable.
Right.
You know? So I was around. We lived in Jeffersonville in a little house. I was around probably 9 or so, and in the middle of the night, I don't know what time it was, I woke up and just was wide awake all of a sudden for no good reason. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll go to the bathroom. And so I kind of sat up a little bit in bed, and I looked, and from my bedroom, I could look kind of through the hallway in a catty corner, the bathroom. I could see the bathroom there. My parents' bedroom was right there, too. It was a tiny little, you know, ranch house built in the 60s. And I could see there was a white figure, a childlike, child-sized figure standing in the bathroom. And I was like, and it was just a form. It wasn't, didn't have a face. It just was like the form of a child. And I was just like, ugh, you know, what the hell? And so this thing floats. It didn't walk. It floated through the hallway and into my room and up next to my bed. And of course, I was 9. I grabbed the covers and pulled them over my head.
Yep.
And
I still do that.
I probably would if I saw this thing today. And so after a while, nothing happened, and I pulled him back, and it was gone. I was like, oh, my gosh, what, you know. And I sort of set up, I was going to go to the bathroom again, and there it was again in the bathroom.
Twice, man.
And so this had actually happened 3 times, and the third time I just didn't take the covers back off of my head, and I fell back asleep, and the next morning I told my parents. They were like, yeah, whatever. What an imagination you
get.
I told my grandparents, I told everyone, and then they didn't believe me, and, you know, like, I don't know, maybe a year later, same thing. I wake up in the middle of the night. You know, I'm like, oh, what the? You know, and I go to sit up, and there it is again in the bathroom. And I said, nope, not this time. And I cover up my head and finally fell back asleep. I didn't even want any part of it. Well, then my parents, we went and they put in an offer on a house in Clarksville. We were getting ready to move. And we knew we were moving, and we were in our last weeks in the house that I'd grown up in. And I woke up one night, and my dog, Peppy, was on the bed. By this point, he had gotten to the point where he'd like to sleep with me, right? And so I woke up, middle of the night, don't know what time it was, and I looked up, and there is this thing, and this time it's got an arm, and it's reached out, and it's holding onto the doorknob of my bedroom door. And about the time that I looked up, my dog looked up at it. And I went, and that was the last time I saw it. But I'm like, if Peppy saw it, I know something was there. He didn't growl or anything. He just looked up at it. So, and maybe he just felt me stir and look. I don't know. But he looked at the thing. So, and that's the last time I ever saw. We moved out 2 or 3 weeks later. And, you know,
That's like, I tell people all the time, if you want to know if your house is haunted, just get an animal for just a couple days.
Yeah, just foster a dog.
Just get a cat and let it walk around and stare at nothing.
It's interesting that you talked about in the story that your grandmother would tell you, because we were talking about how, especially the difference between intelligent and residual hauntings, mm-hmm. and how residual hauntings tend to be reflections, you know, mimicry, whatever. Well, guess what? If it's on the fifth floor of something and that building gets torn down, it's then going to exist in the sky, right? And we talked about that because we had Keith Age on here a couple weeks back, and he had talked about going to the original Exorcist house with the Roland Doe, the actual boy that they went to. They did a whole big thing on it, and in that documentary, they talk about that. There are people that have climbed trees or whatever and experienced stuff because they're up on the floor where the thing took place. And so I was thinking about that the whole time when you were like, oh, it looked like she was doing dishes. Because she was. She was still doing dishes and fixing food in her old kitchen, right? You know, or in the asylum, it's like, how many floors was there? Are there, you know, things that happened up above Sauerkraut Cave? You know, like different stuff like that. That's something that's just, I never thought about. You just always think that they just... go to where the house is, but it's like some of them don't. Some of them will stay in the sky, and then it makes you wonder if someone's had a heart attack on a plane,
right?
And you fly through that spot, there's a guy that's like,
well, and you know, just talking about, I thought you were going somewhere else with that, so because I was thinking the same thing when you were telling that story about what was your grandmother. If it is a residual, then you're right. I mean, it's, you know, she's doing dishes and everything, but. She walked over and touched your mom's arm. That seems more intelligent,
right? Yeah, and it's possible though that to her though she still sees everything the way that it is, and what is there now looks ghostly to her. So maybe she was like, "What is this?" right? But I mean, even that the sunk down is like, was she walking down a set of stairs? Right. I mean, who knows? I mean, gosh, especially how many of those like log cabins and stuff were built and torn down because they didn't last, or just a rain store because it wasn't built great in the day.
What's the movie with Nicole Kidman, The Others?
The Others.
Well, that, like, you know,
they.
I don't want to ruin it for anybody who hasn't seen the movie, but but let me just say, watch the movie because it's a really good twist at the end.
It's
that kind of thing where, you know, it's that is the ghostly. Thing for the ghost, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
whew.
Theoretically, anyway.
yet to be proven or disproven.
Yep. Here in a few minutes, we're going to move into our listener story, but I wanted to give you an opportunity if you had anything else, any other anecdotes or any stories that you wanted to share with us before we get into talking about how great you are.
I think I'm spent, actually.
So. All right. Well, let's get in and talking about you, where they can find you, and things like that, because, you know, our listener base loves when we have guests on, and they love patroning things that they have. So
okay, well, great. Books make great Christmas gifts. I'll just put that plug out there. But no, you can find me KevinGibsonWriter.com. That's my website. Go to Amazon and type in Kevin Gibson author, and you'll find my author page, and it's got links to all my books.
Okay.
You can find my band on Facebook, The Uncommon Houseflies.
Yeah.
We have a couple of ghostly tales. We did an interesting murder ballad version of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, which we're very proud of.
Do you got some of that stuff on online that we could listen to the music on YouTube or anything?
Yeah, it's YouTube, iTunes, Amazon.
Great. I would love to end the show with one of your songs.
Okay, great. And I can send you an MP3 if you'd like, either way you want to do it. But
anytime we have a musician, I try to.
One of the songs is actually kind of a ghost story, so I'll send you that one. It's called Supermarket Sushi.
Yeah, so make sure to stick around after we say goodbye and listen to that song.
Right. Yeah, I would love that. But no, and like, just, you can follow me on Twitter at KG Ramone, like the band, the Ramones.
Okay.
KG Ramone. You can find me on Facebook, Kevin Gibson, author. And please interact. I'm always happy to interact if someone has a question or wants to talk about
anything. Very cool.
Very, very cool. And just, we had lightly mentioned it, but you used to host a show here on WCHQ as well.
We finally ended that show, Flies on the Wall. Mm-hmm. It was me and one of my bandmates. We were just kind of spotlighting Louisville music and also kind of acting like idiots. It gave us a reason once a week for an hour to act like Beavis and Butthead, basically.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah. So yeah, we did our final episode a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we, and so a lot of our listeners, the cool thing about WCHQ listeners are they love everything we do. And so I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard that. And so it might be a nice surprise for you right now to hear Kevin on here. But very, very cool, man. We're so thankful to have you on here.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me.
Thing we didn't ask, we talked a lot about ghosts real quick. I got a follow up question before we get into the listener story is what's your views on aliens, UFOs?
I mean, here's the way I feel about it. I've never seen anything that confirms for me that they are there. However, the hubris for us to think we're the center of the freaking universe is off the charts.
Yep. Yep.
I guarantee you there's something out there that we just can't get to because we're not smart enough yet. And they're probably too smart to come to us.
Either there or it's flare-ups from the oil company.
Yeah.
I cannot sit here and say to you that, oh no, there's no alien life, because we're a little tiny pinprick in a galaxy of solar systems. I mean, come on, people.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well,
you don't disbelieve that kind of stuff. It's science.
I mean, there's so many planets or stars like our sun that will support life
exactly.
in our galaxy.
We just can't get to them.
You know, we're in a galaxy cluster, which consists of thousands of other galaxies, and there's thousands of galaxy clusters. So it's asinine to assume that we're the only intelligent life out there.
Exactly.
We're not even that smart.
Yeah, we're not even
We're destroying the planet we have.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like if there's an infinite universe out there, that means there's an infinite amount of worlds
that's
that are
right.
exactly like us.
Right.
There's
an infinite number of these radio shows.
Yes.
For crying
listen
out loud.
To all of them.
Does Earth exist?
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Kevin, so much
for
coming on. And you guys get out there, check out his books, man. Like I said, the two we covered today were Secret Louisville and The Liberation of Crystal Hill. Check those out, man, because they're pretty awesome. But I want to get into our listener story. This one came in. Like I said, I've met a lot of great people on the haunted history of Kentucky. Alyssa Jaggers reached out to me, and she has a really creepy story. So let's go ahead and hear her story.
I have a true story here. I was about 6 years old. We lived in a beautiful home, and I was about 2 years old at the time. I shared an upstairs bedroom with my 5-year-old sister. My older brother was across the hall, and my baby brother and parents were downstairs asleep. One night when I was older, I woke up, and a black figure was standing over my bed with red eyes. I screamed and screamed. Nobody came to my rescue. Somehow I ended up, and I still don't know how, but I ended up standing in the door of my walk-in closet. The year was 1965, and I was in the first grade. The next morning, my mother woke me up for school. I couldn't talk. My voice was gone from all the screaming I did the night before. I tried to tell my mother what I saw and asked why she didn't come. And she said, "Oh, what an imagination you have." But it really did happen, and no one heard my screams. I was so glad when we finally moved out of that house. It may have been beautiful, but it was haunted.
So big red eyes.
Yeah.
Big red eyes. And she said she screamed so much that she could barely speak the next morning, yet no one heard her.
No one heard her.
That, so it's like, so here's a ghost that's got noise-canceling headphones. Like,
hear that or it's an internal scream.
It's, well, yeah, I guess so.
In
I mean,
space, no one can hear you scream.
No, apparently in her bedroom, too.
Yeah.
But no, I've been there, you know, where you think you're screaming, like in your dream, so maybe did you get up? But the thing that gets me was how raw her throat was.
Well, but I mean, the mind has control over the body, right? So you can, I mean, I've had situations where I think that I hurt my leg, and I wake up the next morning and my leg is sore.
Right.
So did I hurt my leg, or did I just, my mind made it true in my body? So,
well, and even then, it's like the classic line of, oh, what an imagination you have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like, God, how many kids
just
have
the quick
seen,
dismissal.
Seen
just,
things. Yeah. Right. And I mean, you think about every horror movie. You're like, it's either the parents don't believe what the kid is saying,
right,
or the husband. It's rarely ever the wife. The right. husband is like, you're stressed from having to be at home with these kids because obviously it's 1952, right? And it's always something like that. And I'm like, I always said if I had kids, if they said something to me right away, I'd be like, okay, I believe you. Because the stuff I saw when I was a kid still sticks out to me like I'm seeing it today. And luckily my sister was there with me and my brother, and I had a pretty accepting family. My dad was rarely against that stuff, but there were times though he was just like, no.
You saw that commercial.
Yeah.
Do you think that like kids are just more emotionally receptive to it?
I what I think is that society hasn't squashed them yet.
Right.
Because we do. Improv is the same way. When I have to teach them, I have to teach them how to use their imagination muscle again.
Yeah.
Because they've been told it's not okay to be silly and goofy and pretend to be a pirate anymore. And, you know, now it's a little different now with cosplay being so big and stuff. Yeah. But so it's usually a lot of the older students that I get. But, yeah, I think they get squashed down and they just think that what they saw was their imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they also, as you age, as your mind develops, you develop theories around you explain away things, whereas a child doesn't have the intelligent factor to be able to explain things away. So,
or the need to explain it away,
right?
You know,
right.
To not look crazy to your friends and family,
and thus brings back society. Society yeah. says that none of this stuff is real,
right?
You know, and that it's hokey and that it's crazy. And there's still a hangover from the back in the days that it's all craziness, right? That
right.
it's that right. some sort of mental disorder. That if you see any of that stuff, and I hopefully see some of that go away. But anyways, make sure to send in your listener stories to us. We want them. Send them to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or find us on any of our social media at fearscapepod, Instagram, Twitter, any of that, and send it to us there. We love them. Or hit us up. We'll open up a Google Drive link for you if you want to record your voice. But we got to get out of here. But yeah, go ahead and check out Kevin's website. That was kevingibsonwriter.com. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Check that out. Make sure to check out WCHQFM.com while you still can, people, while you still can, as well as the Destination Nation Network, which is at destinationcomics.com/DNN. So we are going to get out of here. Just a little heads up. We're going to have Keith Age back soon.
Yep.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be great.
He's going to be coming in and joining us for another special episode very shortly. So make sure to stay tuned for that. And on that, we're going to get out of here. So thank you for tuning in. This has been Fearscape. And this is Stefan. And I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And once again, thank you, Kevin. We'll
Thanks,
see you guys later.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks. Good night.
mouth open wide. I could not believe what he just said. But I decided right then that I would never eat supermarket sushi again.